always great to have. There's a massive week in the state as far as the budget is concerned. Here to discuss is the state senator representing the first senatorial. You know him well, Anthony Palumbo. Nice enough to give us some time here on a Wednesday morning. Senator, how are you? Everything okay?
I'm well. Good morning. How are you?
So we got a lot on the line and everything else. A budget looms as far as a deadline is concerned. Friday at midnight, in your estimation, will we make it?
No. I really don't think so. We don't even have bills printed other than debt service, which is basically pay your bills. And the lenders typically and the institutions need that to be passed by April 1. Unfortunately, I just don't think that we're going to get there. The negotiations apparently are stalling and restarting and stalling and restarting. But a real telling example of whether or not this is going well, or a testament to whether or not this is going well for my now 10 years up here, is whether or not the staff, governor's staff, senior staff in both houses meet, usually over the weekend, to start hashing out some of the easier items, other than the big tickets, you know, the bail reform, the housing, all these other issues, taxing the rich, all the typical, you know, fan favorites of a progressive Democratic Party, and that they didn't even meet, apparently, this weekend. They said, don't bother, we're not even close. So when bills aren't in print, they need to age 3 days once the final bill comes out. And we usually have around 9 or 10 bills is the budget. We have one, the big ugly, as we call it, that's got everything in it from soup to nuts, and that's usually they'll put a few poison pills in those big budgets where, you know, some people you kind of have to vote for some of it, but the really bad stuff is also thrown in, and it's one vote, up or down, you know, things like bail reform. This is governor has the most leverage. There have been many lawsuits against George Pataki. Sheldon Silver, the former assembly speaker, sued. And the courts basically said, under our Constitution, the governor can put policy in the budget, even though it has nothing to do with a budgetary item. I mean, a great example of that is bail reform. That had nothing to do with appropriation of money, and Cuomo shoved it into the budget. So this is where I think the governor needs to flex her muscles and get what she wants. And then both houses, of course, are trying to do the same. And, you know, they want uber-progressive. They want more taxes. They want an MTA tax increase on Long Island to the tune of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, and you know, more funding for the MTA, congestion pricing, all these things that are just bad for Long Islanders are really what the New York City progressives want. And sadly, they're kind of controlling they are controlling both houses of the legislature right now. They're overwhelmingly the biggest part of their caucus. So they're driving the bus, and, you know, you've got a majority of Democrats, and then within the Democrats, you have a majority of city-oriented people who don't really care about suburbs, unfortunately, and it seems as though the governor, hopefully she doesn't take the bait, but, you know, her proposed housing plan and the MTA tax is, again, just bludgeoning suburbanites like us to the benefit of New York City, and that's not going to fly, in my opinion.
Senator, I've been doing this a long time. I agree with you, by the way. I don't think the budget will come near the finish line Friday at midnight. There's massive impasse as far as ideas and opinions here. You know, raising taxes, the bail stuff, the charter schools, just spending copious amounts of money one after the other, after the other, after the other, as far as policy is concerned. I mean, you know what I can't understand? And I was thinking about this the other day. You know, you take a guy like the speaker, right, Cole Hastie. He gets reelected all the time, not even close, landslide-type numbers. Yet, in reading polls and everything else in some of the areas in and around his district, right, they support a lot of these tough anti-crime laws. They want more charter schools. Hastie's on the other side of this as far as opposition. Yet, a guy like him gets reelected all the time, and it's almost as if he doesn't have anybody to run against. That's how much he wins by. And I'm trying to figure out, why does this happen all of the time, even in our neck of the woods? I can never figure it out. Why is that? If the policies are so bad, so detrimental to society, in essence, why do these people get reelected and put people in harm's way in so many different areas of life? How does that happen in your estimation?
You know, and that's, it's funny. It's funny that you say that, because just yesterday we were talking about a poll that was run in Carl Hastie's district that had a majority in favor of charter school, a majority in favor of fixing bail reform. I think it was something like 35% agree that the maximum bail should be set on violent offenders, basically remand every one of them. These are the communities that are being affected by these criminal justice policies that the, you know, insulated elites think are great. And the bottom line to answer that question is, you know, his district is probably about maybe 80, 85% registered Democrats. You know, all else are the remaining 20% or so. And I'm just guessing, but I know it's a primary. If you win your primary, or if you don't have a primary opponent, it's over. We don't even run Republicans in those districts. They just aren't going to win. And I don't know if it's the complacency of the electorate, you know, because life gets in the way and people say, yeah, that's terrible, but I got a lot going on. I got to get to work. I got to get my kid from the bus. You know, they've got all these other life issues that don't motivate them or get in the way of motivating them or get in the way of them just voting. That could have a lot to do with it. But let's think about, in a broad stroke, we talk about what happened this past November. We have inflation sky high. We have a fully Democrat-controlled Congress and president. Inflation is soaring. We're feeling less safe. We have an open border. And then we go to New York. We have a new governor who just took over, who was a clerk in Erie County for a little bit, was a half of a term congresswoman, who's the governor. We have Lee Zeldin, who I think clearly is established and capable candidate on the ballot. He crushes it in the suburbs, 60-65%. And New York City, this is really what goes to the heart of your question, he needed 35%, one-third roughly, of New York City to vote for him. He got 30%. So in the inverse, you have 70% of people living in Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, and the Bronx saying, you know what's going great? People getting pushed in front of subways. Crime is just outrageous right now. The numbers are off the charts. People are unsafe. Police officers don't want to keep they're retiring in record numbers. You know what we need? We need more of the same. And these people go in and vote 7 out of 10 for the status quo. So whose fault is it, really? I mean, New York City is 40-45% of our vote, so they control basically most elections, you know, generally speaking, and 35%. Lee Zeldin did so well outside of New York City because we go to the polls, we see what's going on in life, and we say, this is terrible. New York City is a dump. It reeks of marijuana and human excrement. I don't even want to go into the city. It's dangerous. It's terrible. And the people in the city say, you know what? This is a great idea. Let's continue with what we have. And that's what just blows my mind, that they don't even want to give the other side a try. They don't even want to say, maybe it's time for something a little bit different. So those are the things that are so upsetting to me. And look, I'm going to keep up the fight. I got two kids, one in high school, one's a freshman in college, so I'm not giving up the fight. But when you see something like that, it's so disheartening. And you see something like you're saying, Carl Hastie just continues to win and win and win and win. And he's got his signature is on this as well. Clearly, he controls his conference, and clearly, he's one of the three men or women in the room. That's the way it works. So he's responsible for bail reform. He should be held responsible for discovery reform and the high taxes. We're the highest tax state in the country. And yet, you know, nobody does anything about it. We've lost more people than any other state in the country. We have the highest out-migration of any big city state. And, you know, Florida gained over a million people. And we lost a million people. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding. But unfortunately, you know, nobody seems to care at this point until we lose enough residents that we can have the revenue for a $230 billion, with a B, budget. It's going to be around $227 billion. Our budget is more than Texas and Florida combined. And both states individually have more residents than us. So
an excellent point.
Tax and spend, you know, state.
That's an excellent point, Senator. Excellent point. You know, when you think about it, the state spent about $140 billion 8 years ago, right? And now you have this proposal of $227 billion in the next year, and you got more proposals, add another $5 billion or so more. And you bring up Texas and Florida. Think about it. I mean, Texas has 30 million people, projects state spending around $170 billion. Florida has, what, 23 million people and a budget of $115 billion? I mean, New York overspends. It is unbelievable, some of the stuff that goes on. You know, I mean, it is unbelievable when you think about it. And you got to wonder, and you mentioned the exodus, 400,000 people in the last couple of years that have exited New York. I mean, if that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does. I think people are fed up. And they don't see a lot of light at the end of the dark tunnel here. That's the problem. Because when they see the constant bickering regarding the bail stuff, listen, there's three things I've always said, Senator, non-negotiable. It's the judges, right? Judges have to have full discretionary powers. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And that is it. I mean, you know, that non-negotiable as far as everything is concerned. And, of course, disclosure and discovery as well, which we've, you know, been on for the last couple of years. These are all things that are non-negotiable. But when you have the Hasties of the world, the Andrew Stewart Cousins, and by the way, let's throw in Mike Janoris. You know, he is a another winner as far as where we are at here. Well, you have a recipe for disaster. And that's what the people in New York are feeling right now. They can't take it anymore. They're taxed beyond belief. They can't make a living here. It's just beyond. And when you have, you know, free states like Texas and Florida, listen, it's a no-brainer. Heck, you even got people from California fed up with Newsom's policies that are heading down south. So that kind of gives another big statement right there. But, you know, you have to wonder, under this regime, if things are going to change. It doesn't look like they will.
And that's the most discouraging part, that this is the opportunity to show that you're a true moderate. She's a Western New Yorker, and she won in a seat that is a pretty solid Republican seat, Governor Hochul did when she ran for Congress in a special election. She was endorsed by the NRA, I believe. So, you know, she had some moderate chops, but once you get into that seat and get that magical pen in hand, it's almost like, you know, we would joke when friends of ours would become judges that they get robitis, that they start acting like lunatics because all of a sudden they're the big shot. This would be the opportunity to make her mark. And quite frankly, with the bail reform, we're the only state in the union that doesn't allow any judicial discretion. And, you know, 49 other states have some version of it. Even when liberal New Jersey enacted their bail reform, they allowed a dangerousness standard. So it's either some sort of discretion, you remove least restrictive means, or you add a dangerousness standard. And this is a win-win. And I think just politically, you know, this is really the first rodeo, I think, when there are real issues to be hashed out, the first rodeo for the governor, Governor Hochul. I would say, let it go late. And when you issue an extender, under our Constitution and statutory law, the governor can issue an extender only from the governor. She could put all she wants in her extender and say, okay, legislatures, here you go. Now shut down the government. Either you vote for my budget, which includes changes to bail reform, even, God forbid, I hope no MTA tax, and I would hope no housing plan. But she can put whatever she wants in it and say, you vote for it, and the government stays open, and we extend this for a few weeks, continue negotiations, or you vote no on my budget, and you shut it down. It's up to you. Bold political move. Takes a lot of guts. But that might be the... If they're being this unreasonable, because apparently the assembly leadership walked out, is a rumor, I don't know if it's true, but they walked out of negotiations when the governor's people were trying to talk more about bail reform. This is a non-starter, and they walk out. Okay, great. I'll tell you what's a non-starter and a walkout. Nobody gets paid until August. You want to play that game. We're going to do what's best for the state, not what's best for your political friends. Because what's best for the state, overwhelmingly, is to fix bail reform, period. I would prefer repealing it and starting from scratch. Because there were changes that were needed, no doubt about it. But at least a very significant change, like removing least restrictive means and allowing judges to set bail. There are all types of appellate mechanisms and writs that you can bring. If some crazy judge, you know, puts $100,000 on a jaywalking ticket, there are remedies at law that you can seek. That's a very easy thing, and we can ultimately build in more if necessary to keep the advocates calm and let people know we don't just want to put people in jail. We want a balance there. Again, it takes a lot of political moxie. I don't know if the governor has it, but this is a win-win for her. I just hope she can see that and has a political will to just say, you don't want to talk? Fine. This is what we're going to do. You're going to live with my budget until we figure it out. That would be the way to do it if I were the one on the second floor. But we'll see.
Senator Anthony Palumbo with us. Talking about the budget as far as the Friday deadline, which he and many others think will not be made. My opinion is it won't either. There's just too much of a gap here. And I'll tell you this much. I just don't know if she has the backbone, to be honest with you, Senator. And I say that because of the raises that were given at the start of the year without any type of negotiation involved. I say that about the negating of her pick for the appellate judgeship in Hector LaSalle. She has egg on her face after that one, big time. And now the question is, what happens here? Now, I know Friday there was some finalists revealed by the State Commission on Judicial Nomination. The question is, here we go with a centrist pick, which everybody loved, I think, in that of Hector LaSalle. But right now, who's to know here? Does she go more conservative? Does she follow suit as far as the progressives? That's an interesting component in all of this and for the future of her tenureship here. Because, in essence, a lot is riding on it. You know, a lot is riding on it as far as the moxie, so to speak, of Governor Kathy Hochul. Does she play up to the Hasties and the Janarises of the world? Or does she try and play a little more hardball here? Now, she was embarrassed last time. That was sheer embarrassment beyond belief. The question is, which way does she go here? What do you think?
Another good question. When you think about the nuance of, the fact that three judges already sitting on the bench are on this list, Judge Cantero, Judge Troutman, and Judge Wilson. Troutman and Wilson are more on the left than Canetaro, and she could pick any one of them. And we actually have a bill that was just proposed where she could pick from the same list. So think about this. Judge Troutman is from the Buffalo area. She was an appointee by Governor Hochul. That was her appointee. So if she picks as chief judge, Judge Troutman, then she wants to pick from the same list. There's only six left, but you've got two of those six are already on the bench. So for associate judge to fill the gap, to pick number seven, you're really, really only picking from a list of four. I don't want to get too far in the weeds. Obviously, you know I'm the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, and I was the plaintiff. I sued to put Hector LaSalle, get his nomination to a full floor vote. And we won that lawsuit because they were being cute again, trying to put their thumb in the eye of the governor, you know, the Senate Democrat majority, looking to flex their muscles. I think, number one, it can't be done prior to the budget. That will be telling. And number two, I think that it's probably going to be a safe pick would be one of the three who are already confirmed, who have already been on the bench. Canatero is a pretty more moderate centrist judge, and I know he would side a lot with Judge DeFiore. And the Senate Democrats are still smarting from the redistricting decision. Remember, they drew a bunch of unconstitutional congressional lines, Senate lines, as well as assembly lines. And the court threw it out in a vote of 4-3. So they're very upset that they actually couldn't use their gerrymandered congressional unconstitutional line, that we had a special master just draw fair ones based on population. And Republicans essentially swept in those districts that are even in play. We swept all those seats. And the reason why I believe we have 4 seats of our 5-seat majority in the House of Representatives is thanks to New York, which I think is really, really hurting nationally as well, hurting the Democrats, because they look to have dropped the ball. And if they could have just done what they were supposed to do, they would have probably picked up 2 seats and had the majority again in the House in New York. So a blue, super blue state like New York, having turned the tide for Republicans, I think is a tremendous embarrassment nationally for all the Democrats. So they want a court that's going to rubber stamp their shenanigans. So it's kind of a long answer that I'm giving you, but it's a complex issue where I think it's done after the budget. It's another round of controversy that is not necessary right now. Yes, we do have a short court. We only have 6 people. I think the Hector LaSalle thing was abysmal. I'm embarrassed for the state for what they did to an incredible judge who was just ultimately qualified, had tremendous integrity and ethics, and was a hardworking, really smart guy. Still is. He's a presiding judge in the second department, which, by the way, is the largest appellate division in the country, and he's doing a great job. He deserved it, and I'm just embarrassed for them, because they made fools of themselves, being rude and making personal attacks at a guy who deserved none of that. The only thing he deserved was to be chief judge. So that was really upsetting to me, just as a human being and as a resident of New York. But really, this is where we are in New York. Sadly, this is the game that they want to rig the court, which is the final check and balance that exists really on the judiciary and constitutionality of their action. But they don't want that. They want to be able to do whatever they can do, whatever they feel like doing, with impunity. So I'm quite nervous about how this is going to go. And I just hope the governor, again, when you talk about political moxie, I just hope that she has the guts to make the right choice and just keep on picking moderate to conservative to just smart, ethical judges is all we're looking for, who are going to follow the law and call balls and strikes. If she has the gumption to do that, if the Senate continues to vote them down, just keep on keeping on and just keep adding, just keep picking those types of judges, and eventually we'll get to 7. That's really my point.
I just don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence. I really don't, especially with the housing proposal and the 800,000 units over the next 10 years to usurp zoning laws, to completely eradicate suburban life as what we have on Long Island right now. I just don't have a lot of confidence in it. I'll be honest with you. I really don't. I really don't. I don't have a lot of confidence. You know, I don't. And it's unfortunate. I'll tell you one thing. And a final thought, as far as the budget and with what happened in Nashville on Monday, I think the schools need to have more dollars in the coffers, and it should be a mandate regarding school counselors per student, whatever the number is that's needed. Obviously, it has to be different as far as what we see in an elementary school, maybe to a high school, less students, whatever. But I think we got to have the right amount of counseling involved. I think also we have to shore up the safety regarding arm guards You have to have armed guards now in schools. You have to have a different structure as far as how the schools are built. And I'm talking bulletproof glass. Listen, this is the day and age we live in right now. I'm not taking any chances. I think it can prevent situations of what we saw in Tennessee. I think if we go the extra mile here and do what we have to do, it's all to keep these kids safe. And we have to. All that goes on with mental illness and everything else. We have to have Prior 1 right now in every state. And I am hoping, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian, I could care less. This has to be a priority when it comes to education right now. And I hope people keep that in mind as far as what we need it. What do you think?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It should be, in fact, if there are hardening techniques that each school wants to engage in, it should be exempt from the tax cap, the 2% increase when it comes to budgets, because that is the most important thing, obviously, health and safety of our children. They just break your heart. Could you imagine sending your kids to school and you find out that there's been a shooter and that your kid may be one of the victims? It's just, I can't even fathom that. When I think about it right now, having two of my own, it's just overwhelming. And to have been in law enforcement as a prosecutor, I'm the son of a homicide detective, having grown up around cops and these stories, that, you know, it never doesn't hurt. It always hurts. No matter how desensitized you may be to some of it, crime scene photos and meeting with victims' families, it's just heartbreaking every single time. And, you know, to equate that or relate that to the budget, so many of these so-called advocates, and, you know, they want more bail reform, they want more criminal justice reforms in addition to bail and discovery. Alvin Bragg actually complained, the Manhattan DA complained about how he can't prosecute cases, and he's had to dismiss thousands of cases for technical violations because of the new discovery reform. How discovery reform needs to be changed. Alvin Bragg, probably most liberal, most, let's say, non-aggressive prosecutor in probably the world, if not the country. Day one says, I'm not going to charge robbery if you brandish a gun and don't discharge it. That's the kind of lunatic we're talking about. And he's complaining about these reforms. So now when we get back to the budget, the fact that some of these lawmakers who claim to care about society can't see the reality and the dangerousness of these policies, how it's not making New York safe, how in Carl Hastie's district in the Bronx, more people than not want changes to bail reform in one of the most liberal districts in probably the world. And they're ignoring it because they say it's all anecdotal. And now the statistics are coming out and you're seeing it. New York City Police Department, you're seeing independent studies now saying that, oh, yes, this is terrible. The numbers have gone up. We even had some wacko from John Jay issue what they call a white paper who said that, you know, recidivism has gone down. Complaints have gone up by 55,000 in New York City. They're just not arresting people. So we have more complaints of criminal conduct, and he's saying that crime is down? I mean, it's just so dishonest. So going back to the schools, last comment is, of course, I think we need to absolutely invest. That should be priority one, keeping our children safe in these schools from a deranged person getting in there. And more importantly, who stopped it? And people talking about defunding the police over the last few years, who saved everybody else in that building? The good guys with guns. They came kicking the door in, ran toward the shots, and neutralized the threat. They're the heroes. We need more of them, and we need them in schools every single day.
Like officers Engelbert and Collazo down there in Nashville. And those two should be put on a pedestal. As far as medals of freedom, presidential, I don't, whatever, the highest of honors, as far as I'm concerned. Because with all the discussion about, you know, taking away police, defunding, and what I want to know, where are the Hoylemans? Where are the Walkers? You know, what are they saying? What are they all saying now? Do they say anything? How about embracing cops, and for crying out loud, look at this bail stuff for what it is. A prime example, please. A prime example of how important the police are to keeping us all safe. I mean, those two officers, they can never have enough accolades for the rest of their lives, for what they did. And you compare that to how people acted in Uvalde. And for that matter, Parkland. Parkland, remember? Remember the coward from Broward who didn't go in there? And Scott Israel, who, you know, all he cared about was a TV camera and everything else. And Uvalde in the 70 minutes that elapsed, my goodness. Can't say enough. And everybody on that state ledge should look themselves in the mirror. Those who oppose all this stuff. And really ought to think twice. And Senator, a final thought on my end. If they can't figure out, they ought to get out of office. Get out of office. For once and for all, please. Get out of office. I mean, that is a key. Because they're not doing anybody any favors. We shall see, my friend. It's always good talking with you. A lot on the line. I know you're working hard. And we shall see what happens in the next couple. How's that?